This episode of Earl Grey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org.
Hi, this is Robert O'Reilly. My name is Gowron. Honor to you and your house. You're listening to Trek FM.
T.O. Greyhawk.
Welcome to another cup of Earl Grey, Trek FM's dedicated podcast to the next generation. I'm your host, Justin Ozer. Amy is away this week, but join with me today is Joe Keegan. Joe, how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm absolutely terrible, Justin. Life's not worth living, and I want to throw my sewing machine and all my fabric on a bonfire and blow the planet up. It's very stressful when you decide to make 8 different costumes for Star Trek Las Vegas and you've not even finished one yet. You've got a week to go.
See, for a second, I thought you were hinting a little bit at what we'll be talking about today, but this has gotten pretty dire. Do you really feel that way?
No, it's just cause I've only been sewing for like a year. Like last summer, I decided to teach myself. But doing Discovery uniforms... Mm-hmm. It's just they're overly engineered and impossible to get right easily. So, yeah, I'm a bit stressed out. I feel like I'm living in a Chinese sweatshop.
Wow. Okay.
But otherwise, I'm chipper and excited to be here. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, one of the things that we wanted to do, as we've done the last couple of weeks, is just a reminder, listeners, if you put a review in iTunes between now and August 31st, we will enter you in a contest to win some great Star Trek collectible cards provided by associate producer Chris Trebuzio. So we've gotten some reviews in. Please submit your review if you haven't done so already. And we'd just love to have your feedback and enter you into that contest.
So if you do a written review between now and August 31st, a written review and some... a star rating, you can be up for a chance to win these amazing collectible cards.
Yeah, that's an exciting opportunity.
So as people have been listening to our podcast, Earl Grey, all over the world, we discovered a couple of weeks ago that we can have access to the reviews from Apple Podcasts all over the world. So interestingly, if you listened a few weeks ago, we discovered that we were number 18 in the Apple Podcasts for film and TV in the Czech Republic. So I strangely decided to give a Czech shout out to everybody in the Czech Republic. This week we discovered, for a very short time, we were at number 21 in Hungary. And so I thought, oh, we really have to start the tradition or continue the tradition and do a shout out in Hungarian. I found Hungarian super difficult. And apologies if it doesn't translate as what we intend it to translate as. It's purely the fault of Google. So here goes nothing.
You're a very brave man. Go ahead.
if there are death threats from Hungarian people after this, I apologize.
I have to say, so we heard about that we were doing well in the Czech Republic, at least for a short time. But we didn't hear from any listeners in the Czech Republic. If you're in the Czech Republic, Hungary, you know, some country that where you're listening to us outside of, let's say, the United States. I know we do hear from listeners in Canada and the UK and Australia and all of that. Let us know that you're listening. We'd love to hear it. But go ahead, Joe. Go.
See if you're from a country, a non-majority English-speaking country, and you start listening, and please don't expect, depending on the difficulty of your language, that I'm going to give you a shout-out every week. So I'm just putting that out there.
Well, I expect it.
So this should translate as hello to all our listeners in Hungary. Thanks for listening. Udvözlöm a magyarországi hallgatókat, köszönöm, hogy meghallgatták.
Wow, Joe, I'm really impressed because I'm looking at that on our outline here. I don't know if I could have pronounced it nearly as well as you did or any attempt.
What are those two dots called? Are those umlauts?
Umlaut, yeah.
Oh, why are there so many umlauts?
There's lots of umlauts and some accents.
Yeah, every second letter.
I think some of the words have three umlauts. It's quite impressive. Mm-hmm. But thank you, Joe. We really appreciate that shout out to our Hungarian listeners who hopefully will write to us and say they either appreciate it or can tell us what that really translated to.
Or shout at me in Hungarian how I destroyed their language.
Anyway, sorry. Let us know. But thank you, Joe. I really appreciate that. And we'll see what other challenges we come up with in the coming weeks.
For me, I suppose, yeah. Thanks, Justin. Well,
you volunteered.
All right.
So we do have some Babel Conference feedback for Earl Grey 283. That was our favorite Star Trek memorabilia. Now, we received quite an outpouring of response. There were many comments. I can't necessarily read them all. I would encourage you to go to the Babel Conference, search for Earl Grey 283, and you'll see all the great images and discussion there. But we wanted to read out a couple of the comments. So, Joe, you want to start with the first one?
Yeah, that was my favorite episode. That was my first hosting challenge. And it was just so much fun. As Star Trek fans, it was just really good to get together and talk about our favorite stuff that we've collected.
It was fun, yeah.
It was. So Paloma Bennett says, I really enjoyed hearing you talk about your Star Trek memorabilia. I have a Deanna Troi t-shirt like Amy. My other Star Trek shirts are a 30th anniversary Star Trek Next Gen Enterprise D and a Discovery one too. I also have three starships, the Enterprise D, Enterprise B and a Klingon Bird of Prey, a Deanna Troi vinyl pop and a Star Trek charm bracelet. I love hearing about all these little things that people have that I've never... I honestly don't know what a Deanna Troi vinyl pop is.
Oh, yeah, so it's... If I remember right, it's kind of those little... Is it the Funko Pop figures? The little figures with kind of the big heads? I don't know if you've seen
them. Are they like the wee bobblehead things that...
Not a bobblehead, no. But it's kind of... I don't even know how to describe it. Just I think this might be the Funko Pop thing, but...
Okay.
They're fun. But yeah, Paloma also shared some... images of her collection that she described. So yeah, thank you for sharing that. It's just wonderful to hear about all this stuff. There's so much Star Trek memorabilia, isn't there?
Oh, there's so much as well. I think I like the fact that she's talking about the Eagle Moss collection, possibly.
For the starships, yeah.
The starships, Enterprise D, B, and the Klingon Bird of Prey. I have all of them and consequently have no space.
You have all of them and like 200 more, it seems like.
I think they multiply in the night.
They're like tribbles, yeah.
Yeah.
So Chris Trabuzio says, with the exception of my yearly Christmas Trek Hallmark ornaments I get as gifts, the Trek stuff that I have, I bought myself. That being said, I think the most memorable gift I have been given is Trek fandom. This fandom has given me the blessed opportunity to talk with, listen to, podcast with, meet and interact yearly with many other fans. Well, thank you, Chris. That's such a wonderful, beautiful sentiment to, you know, take our topic about memorabilia and say the greatest gift is Trek fandom itself. It's amazing, and we're so glad to be able to contribute a little bit to that with the podcast. And I think Chris is talking about meeting people at STLV every year, which is pretty amazing.
I think that's a really important point that we kind of always forget about. It's possibly the best thing about being a Star Trek fan, and a reason why. For the third year running, we're going to STLV again. The more you go, the less it is about meeting the guests that are there or wandering around the vendors room for the 300th time that day. It's about the people that you meet, the other fans, and the interactions that you have. And the fact that you can go back every year and see the same people. And we're coming from Scotland, so it's a big trip for us. I'm coming to see Amy Nelson again, who's one of my most favourite people in the entire world.
So you're not coming to see me?
I'm coming to meet you, Justin. That's okay. Entirely different thing.
I know. Amy's at a whole different level. Yep. That's fine. I'll
Godhood.
Yeah.
Christopher Willman Bung. For my first category of Trek memorabilia, I'll go with what I classify as tacky, or as Joe Keegan, that's me, would say, naff. I have a Star Trek wallet and keychain that I use on a regular basis, and both are worn out enough to be important to me, but can easily be replaced. As for the snow globe, it's not bad in my opinion, but it's nothing I write home about. Lol. LLAP. Wee emoji. Yeah, I wouldn't say any of those are naff, Christopher. I think those are kind of cool. I have a... I think all of the Star Trek wallets you can buy are designed for US money, like US note banknotes. Our banknotes in the UK are a lot wider, and annoyingly, they stick out the top. I'm putting in the them in landscape and not portrait. And a snow globe. Why snow globes are cool? There's nothing naff about a snow globe, either.
Yeah, naff is in the eye of the beholder. Maybe
this is true. It's that line that we talked about. It's the dividing line between naff and a bit quirky and cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, and I encourage listeners again to go to the Babel conference, because that was just the first comment that Christopher had. He had like lots of images, lots of different categories. He has tons of cool Trek memorabilia, so we think it's cool, Christopher, not naff necessarily. Well, speaking of that, Tim Robertson says Trek garden gnomes are cool. So in that episode, you said that you had this garden gnome with Kirk and the Gorn, and that was your naff thing, but we did say that Tim Robertson loves his garden gnome, so you know, it depends on how you think about it.
True. Remember, I'm editing this episode, so I can edit Tim Robertson out if I like. Agree that Tim Robertson is cool, but I will not agree with Trek garden gnomes being cool.
Okay, so I have a respectful disagreement on that.
Indeed.
I think they're kind of cool. All right, so let's get into the main part of the episode, and we're joined with a special guest, Pierre Larocco. Pierre, welcome to Earl Grey.
Thank you. I'm really excited to be here. I've been listening for a long time, and I'm just, I'm excited to be a part of it.
Well, since this is your first time on Earl Grey, tell us about your history with Star Trek.
So I was born in the 80s, so TNG was kind of it was on television while I was growing up, and I watched TNG, watched DS9, not so much Voyager and Enterprise, but I kind of got into that later when I was an adult. And of course the TOS was always on syndication, on reruns and stuff. So I just always remember watching it. I always remember really liking the idea of flying through space. I owned a lot of the Playmates, the toys when I was a kid, and used to create my own adventures. So that's kind of my history with it. And I just kind of, I like the lessons. I like the things that Trek teaches us and the stories that they tell.
Okay. Yeah. Excellent. When we knew you were going to be a guest on Earl Grey, I provided you a list of different topics, and you picked out one in particular, which is to talk about Worf's brother, Kern. And on today's episode, we're going to talk about the different episodes that he's in and do kind of a character profile of Kern. So I'm curious why you wanted to talk about that topic.
I wanted to talk about Kern because Kern's connected to one of my favorite characters, Worf, because Worf kind of walks in two worlds, which I always think is really interesting and neat, and you can kind of get great stories out of that and great metaphors. I also think that I feel like Kern, and we'll get into this, I'm sure, Kern started the arc of Worf being, of what kind of Klingon Worf was going to be. And I feel like that was the start of it. So I think it's a really important arc that kind of runs through two series, and he's a good character.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, I really enjoy Kern and Worf as well. Joe, I know on a past episode you said that Klingons aren't your favorite thing, but I'm just kind of curious. Maybe we'll change your mind to make you like this a little bit more, but I'm just curious about your kind of general thoughts about Kern starting off.
So I feel this is going to, that throwaway comment that I made is going to haunt me for the rest of my life. I think I'm a little bit older than you, Pierre, born in the late 70s, and I happened upon Star Trek after seeing the odd episode when I was really young of the original series, and I stumbled upon The Next Gen, halfway through season 3, and one of the first episodes I must have seen was Sins of the Father. And I think at the age I was at, it was just quite dark, and it didn't have that the kind of the bright positivity that I remember of Star Trek from being really young. And I think that's just gone through my life with me and kind of stuck, that any time a Klingon themed episode came on, I was about, oh, okay, it's going to be dark and it's going to focus on this monolithic culture where they're just warriors and a bit dull. So I realised that this is my first time as co-host with a guest on, and I would like for us to have guests in future and not for anybody to be put off. So while I'm being very welcoming to you, my challenge to you is to convince me that Klingons and Kern specifically are characters in a species to be loved and revered. I'm not going to take back ever the fact I think Tony Todd is utterly terrifying. I think, Pierre, have you ever stood in your bathroom in the dead of night with the lights out and stared at the mirror and said, Tony Todd, 3 times?
No, I have not.
He will appear. I'm quite convinced of it. It's utterly terrifying.
Interesting. All right. Well, I was just kind of curious to expand on that. Maybe we'll convince you. So we're going to talk about some different episodes that Kern appeared in. So there's several TNG episodes, Sins of the Father, Redemption, Redemption 2, and we're also going to talk about a DS9 episode, Sons of Moog. So let's talk about Sins of the Father first. I think, Pierre, that you're right. You know, Kern is appearing in this episode, important in Sins of the Father, and becomes important in kind of kicking off Worf's arc that kind of like goes all the way through TNG and into DS9. So I think what's interesting about this is you've seen Worf for a couple of seasons, you've seen who he is, and then you see Kern, who, when you first see him, is kind of like an even more intense version of Worf. And he's like this exchange officer, and he's like, we will do these things. And there's even this scene where he's saying that, you know, he's not going to kill Riker because he's on a Federation ship. I mean, like, really serious and intense. So I'm curious, Pierre, like, your thoughts on Kern in this episode and, like, how we're introduced to him and what you think of his character from this episode specifically.
So my thoughts on Kern, they started with, wow, this guy's a crazy Klingon. And then over the years, and then rewatching it for this podcast, I started thinking to myself, is he, or did he specifically go to the Enterprise to see what kind of person Worf became? And are a lot of his comments where he's saying outrageous Klingon things, are they all to get a rise out of Worf? Like almost like the idea that when they're having the turkey feast, he's really, really negative about the food, and he's kind of like, well, our food isn't like this. And it surprised me a little that Klingon never had like food from the Federation or something like that. So I was wondering, I'm like, is it just an act to then get a rise out of Worf?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, because I mean, I think it's clear that one of the reasons that Kern is there is because he wants to deliver this message to Worf about, you know, what's happening in the Empire and this judgment for the Council, but maybe also to check up on him. But I don't know, like, I think they've also lived very separate lives with Kern, you know, living in the Empire his whole life. And I think back to, like, the season 2 episode of Matter of Honor, where Riker is an exchange officer on this Klingon ship, and there are Klingons there who have never, like, seen a human in person. So I get the feeling there are a lot of Klingons that haven't, let's say, you know, had Federation food, interacted with anybody from the Federation. So maybe it's possible, but, I mean, has he been just like isolated his whole life and, you know, has never seen Worf since they were separated? I don't know. I think it's a really interesting question, but like, Joe, go ahead.
Sorry. I think that's the impression I got. I was reading a little bit about Kern earlier, how that when he was one, that's when Worf and Moog and Mrs. Moog, let's, for want of a better term, left to go to Kittimer. And Kern was left with family friend. And I was like, that speaks a lot about the about Klingon society, that you would leave your newborn child with a family friend while you go live on another planet or space station light years away. So the scene, he definitely comes aboard, and his behavior towards Worf, he goads him a lot. He might be, I think he's trying to, having not seen him for such a long time, he's trying to ascertain what makes him tick and if he's actually a true Klingon warrior.
Yeah, but there's also a line in there, though, that where someone is saying, maybe it was Riker, that Kern is being hard on everybody except Worf, who would like him to be harder on him. So they're actually noticing he's maybe a little bit easier on Worf than some of the others.
There's the scene with Wesley, poor Wesley, one of the few times you feel really sorry for Wesley, where he's frantically tapping at the helm. Yeah. Where Kern has given like set course, whatever, execute,
yeah.
And Wesley's going. Doop, 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 doop,
you know doop. What's interesting about that, Joe? We haven't covered it on Earl Grey yet because we couldn't cover it in the deleted scenes. But there's actually like a little deleted part where Kern is even like more harsh with him, where he says execute. He just says it really loud. They actually cut that little part out, but he's being like really hard on Wesley, really hard on Geordi, really hard on Riker. He's just being hard on everybody, but maybe a little bit on Worf, but not as much as he could be, which I think is interesting. Maybe it hinted that he knew him.
There's a point where in Kern's room where Worf asks him if he means to dishonor him by being soft on him.
So from Worf's perspective, it's a little bit soft, but I mean, I think that maybe we'll see this as we go along, but I think Kern becomes increasingly like dissatisfied and resentful and bitter toward Worf, and how Worf like has lived this other life and has these, these different options. I don't know. Like I think that like, however you might think that Klingons are generally portrayed, I think Kern and Worf are kind of different in how you see them and how they react to things. Worf, I think, is affected somewhat by, you know, being in the Federation and not doing certain things, and Kern is just like Mr. Super Klingon or something. But then again, if you go back to like A Matter of Honor, where you see these Klingons that are, you know, laughing and having a good time, Worf is not like the typical Klingon, and maybe Kern isn't necessarily either. Maybe he's more intense than others. I don't know. I see different variations. What do you guys think?
I think Worf's, I think we mentioned this in a previous episode, Worf has grown up with this kind of idealized image of Klingons, having had little interaction with any Klingons. So that is why we never see him kind of getting drunk on blood wine or kind of laughing and joking around like Klingons, or getting into fights a lot, just as Klingons do, because he's completely kind of got a singular vision of like all Klingon honor.
Yeah, except for a small part, I think, in Redemption, where Kern is finally like, come on, loosen up and have a good time. But for the most part, you do not see that out of Worf. He's very, very serious.
I almost feel like there are two sides of the Klingon spectrum, where like Kern is like very, very conservative Klingon, and Worf is like really liberal Klingon because of his experiences with the Federation. Because it's also really interesting that Worf hasn't lived on Kronos or in Federation or in Klingon territory for a long, long time, and Kern still takes direction from him as the older brother. And almost refuses to like questions a little, but always backs down. He's never like, no, you're the outsider here.
Yeah, I think that's true, because Kern wants to still hew to that tradition, even if the older brother is somebody who's hasn't been in the Empire for a long time, doesn't necessarily like have the same behavior. It's just like, this is what my tradition says. And maybe he doesn't want to, but he's going to do that. I think that's a good point. What do you think, Joe?
Worf kind of over the like through TNG and Deep Space Nine, Worf kind of ends up being the best Klingon that has ever been, almost, in terms of, I think he's been so assimilated into kind of Federation and human culture that he's taken all the best parts of both being a Klingon and being a member of the Federation.
Maybe. I mean, I would actually argue that the best example of a Klingon is Martok, because he kind of embodies all of that, but he can adjust and can be affected by other points of view in his way over time. But I
would agree with the Martok statement too. I think Worf has been, his arc really opens his eyes about what it is to be a Klingon. Like, he sees corruption, he sees lying, he sees unloyal behavior, he sees all these things that go against everything he thought Klingons were all about. And I think he really, with Martok's help, he kind of turns a corner.
What do I know? I don't even like Klingons yet, so don't trust my opinion.
Well, that may take us into the next pair of episodes, which is the Redemption two-parter, which is about, you know, the Klingon Civil War and the Duras sisters are bringing in Romulan help to the Empire. I think something that you mentioned, Pierre, is true. Like, in Sins of the Father, he sees the corruption. Like, they're doing this thing in the council so they can sweep something under the rug for another family that was really responsible for this traitorous behavior. So there's corruption at those highest levels. And then you see in Redemption that there are Klingons who are more than happy to bring in help from, you know, the Romulans or some other adversary. So, and I think that continues over time all the way into DS9, where in a way Worf has enough and kills Gowron. But I think it's kind of an interesting arc because he does have this idealized view that gets kind of chipped away at in some different places. And I think Redemption is one of those places, although he does kind of convince Kern, who isn't happy about it, to support Gowron, even though, like, it seems like he's somebody who is kind of trying to keep that corruption going on and keep sweeping things under the rug. I don't know, like, Joe, what do you think about what we see of Kern in the Redemption two-parter? Because I think he kind of goes between, like, being the warrior, being unhappy with some of what's going on, grudgingly going along with what Worf's doing. I don't know, it feels like he's in a lot of different places.
He's definitely stuck in this position, like between a rock and a hard place, isn't he? I think he recognizes what's going on and that it's not good for the Klingon Empire, and possibly something has to be done about it. And it maybe takes Worf to step in and say, listen, this isn't right, we have to do something. And obviously the exposure of the Romulan involvement comes into play later.
And I mean, this is also where you kind of see for the first time Worf and Kern together on a Klingon ship, like, fighting these battles, which I think is interesting. Like, what do you think about this two-parter and Kern's involvement, Pierre?
I think we find out that Kern is probably a better tactician than Worf. Just like on the ship, he kind of handles himself a little better, and he's a little calmer. So I think Kern might be the better warrior, to be honest with you. And that's kind of where one thing that really resonated with me. He also makes a comment to Worf about how there's more in heart than duty. When they're in the bar and they're kind of drinking with the enemy. But there's a lot of, like, contradictions. He becomes a really interesting character with those contradictions, because it's like I believe he knows that the Duras, well, the Duras has tried to kill him, but he's kind of willing to side with them on this civil war at first, until Worf's like, no, it needs to be the other way.
I think Kern doesn't know about the Romulan involvement. He just, I think, doesn't like Gowron and wants to support the other side.
Right, but he knew that the Duras has tried to kill him in Sins of the Father. And the other side was the Duras. So, yeah, it's really interesting, and it's interesting just Klingon culture, where somebody that tried to kill you might be your friend soon.
It seems like it's very much about, like, who can help you in the moment sometimes. And I think that's part of what Worf may object to. It's like, whether that is honorable or not, some people are looking for who can support them in the moment. So, yeah.
I'm always amazed about how insightful people are and analytical on things, because Pierre, you're mentioning things and I was like, oh, okay. And then I'm now questioning if I've ever seen any episodes at all, because I think I've missed the key, more in-depth points about them. So
Yeah, I mean, I think what, just like in general, from what I've seen, you know, off more often than not, Klingons are portrayed as a warrior culture, and I think that you can either be into that or it can put you off. But I think there are all of these different, like, subtleties in their behavior and the way they act. I mean, it may seem like this monolithic warrior culture, but the individuals, I think, are acting differently and behaving differently based on their motives or what the different situation is. So I think we do get very, like, individual Klingons. Like, I wouldn't say that, you know, given the same situation, that Worf or Kern or Martok or Gowron, any of them would, like, act the same way. I think they would act differently as individuals based on, like, their history and who they know and how they are and what the situation is. So, like, I think that, like, it's true that generally it is portrayed as this warrior culture and there needs to be other people doing other things for the society to work. But I think in their society, the warriors get, like, the most praise and importance, and so that's why we see them the most often. But I think within that there is a lot of individuality.
I think maybe if we reversed it and we saw the Federation from a Klingon perspective, mm-hmm. the Klingons might just have an impression of the Federation through Starfleet and just see yeah. Starfleet as being kind of odd do-gooders and explorers and try to help out. So we've got this kind of odd perspective on Klingons through the Klingon Defense Forces, the warrior side of it.
I mean, it's a good point. Klingons just seeing the Federation through Starfleet might think that the Federation is a pretty monolithic culture. Like, yeah, there may be some species that look different, but they're all about, you know, the exploration and not firing first. And, like, there's just this philosophy, and that's what they see, and they don't see the civilians that do different things or what happens back at command or all that kind of stuff. They're just seeing these ships out there that from their perspective are saying that they have good intentions, but they're always suspecting it. So they may see it as its own, like, monolithic culture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Cause I mean, there are times where you see, like, the Klingon restaurant in Deep Space Nine yeah. and, like, where there is other parts of that culture that kind of exists in Klingon opera.
Yeah.
I always thought that guy looked really hot in that big white fur thing, like the Yeti coat that he wore. It was like, and being a chef as well, you just burn up.
Maybe. But I love that, the Klingon chef in DS9. But you see that. You also see something like in Suspicions, where there's the Klingon engineer, Kurok, who's kind of, I think that's the name, who's looking at this metaphasic shielding. So there are, like, little places where you see different parts of Klingon culture. And then also, like, I don't know if you guys have read it, but the IKS Gorkon novels by Keith DeCandido are pretty much purely from a Klingon perspective, and they're really excellent because they look at some of the subtleties in the Klingon Defense Force and the different parts of it, but they also look at different parts of the civilian society and all the different things that are going on to make the society run. It's really good. So, but there must be that kind of stuff going on, right? But we see the Klingons in the Defense Force because we're pretty much most of the time following a Starfleet ship or station, and that's who they interact with for the most part. So I think we got off on a tangent about Klingons in general, but I think that was pretty interesting. Any other thoughts on what we see in the Redemption two-parter related to Kern?
No, I mean, I guess one more thing is just that mm-hmm. Kern has very little time for talk and debate. He's very, very yeah. much a man of action. He wants to go and do something. You know, it's he doesn't want to sit and find out why or how, or he just wants to go and do.
I think that's quite true. I mean, there are times when he's arguing something with Worf, but for the most part, I think you do see him enjoy things the most when he's in a battle or in action or something like that. And you see that in the Redemption two-parter. And Sins of the Father, it's not so much that he's, you know, in this exchange program and right. they're going to the council and he gets attacked and you don't get as much of an opportunity for that. But I think you're right. He is more of a person of action. And we could think of Worf as that way as well, because he doesn't tend to say a lot, does he?
No, that is true too.
Joe, any other thoughts on the Redemption two-parter?
I don't think so. I think the second episode definitely becomes more Romulan-focused, with Starfleet and their tachyon detection grid try to kind of expose the Romulan involvement in this Klingon Civil War. So it becomes, mm-hmm. for me, I think that's why I said previously it was kind of my favorite part. When mm-hmm. we were doing the serialized Star Trek and talking about the Klingons, that was my favorite part because it was more Romulans and more Starfleet and less about the Klingons. But okay. I'm definitely going to watch these four episodes again and with this kind of in a new light, I suppose.
Our job is done then.
Well, it can change.
But we're getting you to think about it.
It's creeping up the way, yeah.
So let's move on, actually, to the last episode we'll be talking about. Now, this is a Deep Space Nine episode, Sons of Moog. This is over 4 years after we see Kern in the Redemption two-parter. So Kern is still within the Empire and doing his thing, and we don't hear from him until Worf is on Deep Space Nine, and all of a sudden Kern shows up. So I think this is a pretty interesting episode, the only one where we see Kern on DS9, and we get some backstory of the kinds of things that have happened. So, you know, in the meantime, on Deep Space Nine, there's this Klingon-Cardassian war, and Worf didn't support the Klingons going to war against the Cardassians. So then, back on Kronos, the House of Moog has basically its land and titles stripped, and, you know, Kern kind of comes to the station and he's kind of drunk and despondent. So we see a very different Kern in this, and I always find it to be a really sad episode because over the course of it, you know, Kern is kind of trying to figure out like what he does in this world where he's not part of the Empire. Worf's still the older brother and can tell him what to do. He tries different jobs. Like, it doesn't work. So in the end, they have to, like, erase his memory, and he doesn't know who Worf is. So I've always found this to be, like, a pretty sad end to the arc for Kern. But I'm curious, like, what you guys think this, like, tells us about his character, his interactions with Worf, Pierre?
Yeah, so I always thought of it as a sad arc, too, until I watched it yesterday. And... Mm. And I guess it was the first time I was really focusing on Kern. He's so pained as to what the actions of Worf have meant to him, right? So I'm guessing that he was running the House of Moog because Worf was away, and he was really successful and things were going really well. Worf makes a decision to not support the Empire against this war, and now all of a sudden Kern loses everything. And that, I think, as that really conservative Klingon that we talked about, him being on that other end of the spectrum, he just can't handle that. He's like, I can't handle being this outsider in the Empire. And it's kind of, you know, he first wants to do this ceremonial suicide, which kind of gets broken up by Dax, and so at the end I kind of was thinking, like, this might be the best thing for Kern, right? Like, he doesn't have to go through with the suicide. He's with the family friend that's going to then bring him into their house, and so at the end of this time watching it, I kind of was like, maybe it's not as sad. Maybe it's Worf saying, I've held you back all this time by being the oldest, and I have to make decisions that I have to make, so I'm going to free you from this.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting way to think about it. I mean, certainly when Worf is thinking about it and he's talking with Dax about it, it's kind of like, well, maybe the best thing for him is just to kind of start over and restore his honor in that way. But of course, you don't know where it's going to go. And again, I'll bring in the Ikeas Gorkon novels, because Kern as Rodek is in those novels and the arc continues. And it's actually quite interesting to see like what he does. But leaving that aside, I think you do leave it in a place where I think Worf is sad because Kern doesn't know who he is, but maybe is like, okay, maybe this is the best thing to do. But like, also when I watch this episode, I think Sisko's really angry about like what's going on here, that they're going through with this ritual, and like the cultural tolerance he has limits, and that they hit the limit. I don't know. Like, is it something where Sisko should have been okay with them doing this traditional Klingon thing? What do you think, Pierre?
I mean, so I think Picard would have been okay with it. I think we really see the differences between Picard and Sisko, where Picard kind of always let Worf do Klingon things. He gets mad at him when he kills Duras, but that seemed to, that could have had impacts with the Federation too. He lets them take a shuttlecraft to go to that Klingon festival that one episode, and so I think we see a difference between the captains there. And I don't think Sisko should have been as upset with them. Like, you know, he was practicing his culture, right? His culture says that if you lose your honor, this is a way that you can commit this ceremonial suicide and regain your honor again. So I really was confused as to why Sisko was so upset, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it gets back to something we were talking about on a previous Earl Grey episode, where sometimes Sisko can be affected by his ego and what he personally thinks about something, and Picard can maybe step back a little more. Not necessarily as like a criticism of Sisko. I love Sisko, but I think he can be more affected by like his personal feelings about things. And I think also to the TNG episode Ethics, where Worf is disabled and wants to kind of end his life and is asking Riker to do it, and Riker refuses. I think maybe in that episode, if Riker or someone else was like, sure, I'll do it, then Picard would have been like, well, that's their culture. I think you might be right about that. But anyway, we've mentioned like a couple of things in the episode, but your thoughts, Joe, on Sons of Moog or the things we're talking about?
Would that not be like impossible to navigate, like in terms of the Federation, or being a member of Starfleet, mm-hmm. Having 150 member worlds plus people from out with the Federation, how do you navigate the Starfleet rules and regulations with people's cultural beliefs and practices? Where's the line? Where do you draw that line?
It's probably a difficult thing, and you would think they would have to draw up something that would say, here are the specific Starfleet regulations. If your cultural beliefs, you know, don't violate any of these, then you're good. But of course, for the Klingon culture, they're not part of the Federation, and maybe they haven't taken that into account as much or thought about it as much. Although they do talk about in the episode, you know, violating some regulation, and Sisko's like, I don't care about the regulations. I just don't want you to do this. But Joe, what do you think about in the end where Kern has his memory wiped and he's going to go off? Like, was that a good thing? Does that make it a not quite sad?
So I'm kind of confused as to, mm-hmm. was it Kern's choice?
No.
No, that's why I thought, that's what I thought, and I have huge problems with that.
I thought about that as well when I watched this episode. It's kind of funny because like the scene before, you know, Kern is drunk and Worf's talking with him and takes away the disruptor so he can't kill himself. And I think like Kern like becomes unconscious and then later they're in the infirmary and it's like, okay, Bashir's like, are you sure you want to do this? But you're right, they're not getting his consent and that doesn't seem right.
No. In their defense, he will, because of what's happened to him, he will die.
He'll just find some other way to kill himself.
He will go off the station and he'll just find a way to do it. So they're potentially saving his life. But as to save somebody's life by violating their human rights, Klingon rights, the right thing to do, I don't know that it is. They wiped his entire memory and gave him a new identity, mm-hmm. and gave him a new family.
Yeah, I mean,
that
maybe
made me feel deeply uncomfortable.
Yeah. No, I could definitely see that. And I was thinking, like, is it something where, like, they feel like Kern just can't make decisions for himself, and as the brother, Worf has to make those decisions, but they don't really even talk about that. And I think definitely if they just explained it to Kern, like, hey, we'd like to wipe your memory, and I don't know. I mean, Kern could either be like, no, that would be terrible, or like, you're the older brother, and just go with it, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like Kern might be like, that's a coward's way out, and not want to, you know, not want to go with that angle, but yeah, I agree. It was at first, until I watched it this time, I really looked and researched it. I always thought it was the family that raised Kern was who came to, was that the man who said, hey, I'm your father. But then I realized it's a completely different person. different family friend. So, it's a really interesting one because you don't see Bashir going through any dilemma between it or anything. He kind of is just like very on the periphery. Okay.
Yeah, you would think Bashir would be like, wait a minute, we didn't get, because Bashir and most Starfleet doctors are usually, you know, very much want to talk about the ethical questions, like, are you sure this is the right thing to do? But in this case, they had a couple minutes left in the episode, and it's like, want to do it? Okay. And he just does it. So, because, like, you've seen different parts of Star Trek where people's memories get wiped, but let's say an example like pen pals in TNG, that's for, like, a Prime Directive kind of question. I mean, they're not getting this person's consent to wipe the memories, but they think that has to be done to avoid cultural contamination. But in this case, it's purely because Worf thinks it's the best way to go. It's not because of some larger question, right?
Right.
Yeah, like, and I think what's interesting about this episode as well is you see very much Kern's, like, resentment and bitterness that Worf, you know, it can't be a part of the Empire, but at least he has Starfleet. At least he has something. And Kern just, like, has nothing. I think he can't even conceive that he's out of the Empire, he's out of the Klingon Defense Force. Like, what else could you possibly do? So that's why I mean, like, I feel the episode is sad, because the way that Tony Todd plays Kern in this, I think it's different from Sins of the Father, where it's like, you know, he's this stern guy, or different from Redemption, where he's in battle. This is just kind of like someone who's resigned and sad about his fate, like, through the episode. And I think it's played very, very well, but it just gives the episode a very different feeling, even if maybe, Pierre, there is, like, a little hopefulness that he has a new identity and something new to go to.
Yeah, he also, at one point when he's in the infirmary, he says, he tells Worf he never understood him. And then he says, but you, in your own way, are a very honorable man. Now, I wonder if, because that was when he was still saying, I understand that it was stopped, the ritual was stopped, but why aren't you here to finish it? I wonder, and he says the honorable man part after, I wonder if he's then kind of almost telling Worf that he's in charge, like, I will do whatever you think is best.
It could be. I mean, I think he's giving him, like, after talking about all this bitterness and resentment, he's giving him a certain kind of compliment, like, based on your life and the way that you think about things, you're doing things in an honorable way. I might not agree that that's an honorable way, but according to your code of ethics, you're being honorable. And, like, I think at the end he can kind of respect that. And it's a certain kind of peace, although then he just, like, falls unconscious. So
right.
It's a little weird. But what do you think, Joe?
I felt that, I think it was a bit of a stroke of genius where they had Kern in the Bajoran security uniform.
Yeah.
Now you were talking about him, it just being kind of a sad storyline, this fall from grace because of Worf's decision making. They found that he had nothing and nowhere to go to. So he took this job that he didn't really want as a Deep Space Nine security officer. And just to have him in that kind of grey, beige uniform, in contrast to his Klingon kind of armor uniform, it just compounded that feeling of sadness. It's like, not sad as in like a deep depression almost, like, this isn't fair what's happening to him.
I mean, in a way, those uniforms have kind of more muted or drab colors, and it kind of reflects that as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And then there's a bit at the end where he awakes as, was his name Rodan?
Yeah, Rodek.
Rodek, yeah. Rodan's the monster from Godzilla. And he says to Worf, like, who are you? And Worf says, oh, I'm just a, what is he says? A family friend?
I think he
asked Worf, are you my family too? And Worf says, I have no family.
That's just sad as well, isn't it? I know we can't judge them in our human ways because they're Klingons, so they don't behave or react in the same way we do to kind of family issues. But if that was me and my brother, I would be a mess.
Yeah.
I would be beside myself.
Yeah, I mean, and Worf just has to be kind of... And like, what I think is interesting about the episode, I think it's well done because he says, I have no family, you know, Kern as Rodak walks out. And then Worf walks out as well, and you see him walking out onto the promenade, and then there's kind of like a long shot of everything that's going on. It just kind of compounds that feeling of loneliness, mm-hmm. that Worf is really alone. Like, you had seen him some years before, like, okay, now he's getting to know... his family, his brother, but then he's like, I have no family. Of course, thinking about that, he's saying it in terms of Kern, but like, Alexander's still around, and you know, his step-parents are still around, so it's maybe a little bit weird for him to say that, because he does have family, right? But they're elsewhere.
Right.
True, yeah. Why did he say that? Was it a mistake? Was it a scripting error? Because he does have his human... parents.
And he has Alexander, who's
yeah,
off,
exactly.
I guess at this point, maybe in the Klingon Defense Forces. But
and he has Nikolai, too.
Of course.
Yeah, and there's Nikolai off doing his thing, right? So, like,
and there's
yeah.
the Enterprise crew as well. There is family.
Yeah, because after this, he had to go off and do a couple movies with them, right? So he sees them again. But no, like, I actually hadn't thought about it much, whether that's just... I tend to think it isn't a mistake that they knew he had other family, but that's how he was feeling in that moment. Like, you were here as my family, and I have no family because you don't know me, and all of the people who would be considered my family are elsewhere. They're not here. Like, I have no family here, I think maybe is what he's saying, and he's, like, lonely there.
Because if somebody responded to that question to me, like, oh, I have no family, that begs the question, like, wait, what? You don't have any family? Why? Are they all dead?
It also depends on how you define it, right? Because, like, mm-hmm. me personally, I don't actually, like, know a lot of my, like, blood relatives, but I consider that I have, you know, family. I have friends that I would consider to be family. I have my wife's family that I consider to be family. So, like, it is weird to just say I have no family because you can consider that in a lot of different ways. And Worf is kind of new to Deep Space Nine, but I think over the years that kind of becomes... maybe a little bit of his family, although maybe he's more distant. I don't know. You're making me think about this line a lot more than I thought about it before.
Well, Jadzia definitely becomes his family on Deep Space Nine. Like,
she does. Yeah. And it's interesting in this episode that it opens with him having like this Bat'leth fight in the Holo Suite with Jadzia, and there's, you know, the spark of, you know, what would happen in a couple of years. So that's true as well. So
and then always... does Worf not and become part of Martok's family?
He does, yes.
Because Martok's wife has to come and evaluate Jadzia, yeah.
That's right. I mean, and even
literally got the biggest family I've ever heard of. I have no family. Nonsense.
Except for Data. He has a big family.
And I always thought of O'Brien being part of Worf's family, because O'Brien and Worf have gone, mm-hmm. did a lot together. He, you know, he delivered O'Brien's child.
Of course.
That is true. That is true. And they've known each other for like 8 years or something like that. So, yeah.
True. And if Worf and O'Brien are family, then Kira and Worf must be family because Kira carried O'Brien's baby.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. It's quite an extended family.
It's like no degrees of freedom.
Wow, I had no idea this would go here. Pierre, we'll have you go first with your final thoughts.
You know, I think Kern is a very interesting character. He's one of those characters that kind of, he lasts a long time on Trek. You know, from early TNG through DS9. And when we look at that arc that he goes through from being this proud warrior to being a broken man, you look and you see that there's constants, and his constants are definitely him being the younger brother of Worf and letting Worf make decisions for him. So that's kind of, you know, when you think of it that way, when you're at the end of his arc, he kind of, that happens again, where Worf makes decisions for him. And maybe that's what Kern would be okay with. You know, I know he asked his brother for this ceremonial suicide, but ultimately, at the end, Worf decides something different. And, you know, when we look at what Kern's character was, you know, maybe that's what Kern wants. He just wants his older brother to tell him what to do.
Okay. One more question just that popped up in my head. If it were possible, would you be interested in seeing Tony Todd play Kern again in the Picard series or something else?
Like, oh, absolutely.
Just swinging by? Yeah.
That would be fun to bring him back.
I just had that thought because today, as we record this, listeners, it's the day of the big San Diego Comic-Con panel where I think we're finally going to find out a lot about the Picard series. And, well, they only have 10 episodes for the first season. There's only so much they can do, but my head just kind of goes around with the different things they can do. Okay, excellent, Pierre. So, Joe, your final thoughts and whether we've convinced you to take another look at Kern and Klingons.
The problems exist still for me that I see Klingons as this monolithic culture who are too focused on being warriors. However, Pierre, you have done a very good job of explaining or describing Kern as this more fully rounded three-dimensional character rather than just this kind of archetypal Klingon that I have become accustomed to. So, and I think it maybe previously came up in the serialized TNG that we did, that these episodes, Sins of the Father, Redemption, are like a multi-part episode spread over a number of seasons. So again, with that, with what you've said, Pierre, with this discussion, yes, I'm getting Klingons a bit more. And I think with anything, to have more information and have more knowledge about something, it can make you appreciate it more. So I'm quite open to appreciating Klingons in the future.
Okay.
How's that? Does that work for you?
Yeah, that sounds good. I mean, that's what Trek's all about, right? An open mind?
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. Nothing if not open-minded.
A little side note, Joe. So I'm curious, do you have a favorite Klingon episode? Is there an episode that's centered on Klingons where you're like, normally I'm not as much into this, but I really like this episode?
Oh,
put you on the spot.
Okay. Sacrifice of Age. The one the Klingons attack Deep Space Nine.
The Way of the Warrior?
The Way of the... Was that? Oh, that's where Worf arrives.
That's where Worf comes in. It's the
I think that, but purely that's just the kid in me that likes the big explosions and the battle scenes.
Purely it is a pretty amazing episode. I mean, it has battles and it has character development and a bunch of stuff in it. So.
Also... Okay. The one, if we're thinking about character development, then the one where they've all been captured by the Dominion and Worf has to fight all the Jem'Hadar soldiers and literally just does not give up. He's got broken ribs and he's like, if it was anybody else, they'd be long dead. But he fights and fights and fights. And there's a lot in there about Martok as well, because Martok's been captured. For character development, I would say... I can't remember what that episode's called now.
I think it's part of the Season 5 two-parter. I think it's either in Purgatory Shadow or By Inferno's Light, I think.
Both sound very biblical.
Yeah, I think that could be right. I'm only taking a... I think the one where he does the fighting is by Inferno's Light. But I think that's quite interesting, Joe, because that's one where it's like Worf as the ultimate warrior mold, where he just will not give up to the point where the Jem'Hadar is like, I cannot actually defeat him, which is something hard for a Jem'Hadar to say. So
yeah,
that's quite interesting. Okay. So, hey, I got you to talk about, and I'm glad that we have made you want to take another look and that it wasn't torture for you. So that's good.
No, it was enjoyable.
Okay. So for my final thoughts, I think that, you know, I've always really enjoyed Klingon characters in Star Trek and in all the different different iterations, but probably especially the TNG era. And I find Worf to be fascinating. I think Kern is pretty fascinating. I actually wish that we would have maybe seen Kern a little bit more, because as we've seen, there was this three-dimensional aspect where he'd be different in different episodes and different situations. But I would have liked to maybe see a little bit more of that. Or maybe even something like, let's say, Kern has his memory wiped, but he can still like work on Deep Space Nine, and he is a Klingon that is okay with that. And you see him on DS9 going through these different situations. I don't know. I would have liked to see him more, is all it is, I guess. So I think it's, Pierre, I've had this on the list for a while because we hadn't done a character profile on Kern on Earl Grey. And I think it was a great discussion. So we really appreciate you bringing this to us. I think there was lots of great stuff to talk about and insights. I love when we can just talk about one character or set of episodes and see what we think about it. And listeners, let us know what you think about Kern and these episodes that he's in. So, Pierre, thanks so much for being on Earl Grey today.
Thank you.
And let our listeners know where they can find you online.
Yeah, so I'm on the Babel conference. So I'm always there talking about Trek stuff. And then I'm on Twitter. My Twitter is at @PLARROCCO21. So I'm also on Twitter.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, listeners. So this is where we usually talk about a preview of next week's episode, but we'll actually be off next week because we'll be preparing for Star Trek Las Vegas. In fact, this episode is scheduled to drop on July 30th. So listeners, if you hear this and you're at Star Trek Las Vegas, be sure to contact us or find us, because me and Joe and Amy will be there for Star Trek Las Vegas. And if you're there, we'd love to meet you. Right, Joe?
Oh, absolutely. I can't wait. It's going to be so exciting.
Yeah.
If you all notice me, because I will pretty much be in a scan each of the days of the convention. Yeah.
Nice. So yeah.
Got a series of them coming.
And I guess I should mention, so you and Amy are there for the full 5 days?
I'm there for 10 days. So,
oh my God.
Yeah.
Okay.
When you come this far, you have to really
just
go whole hog, make a whole vacation.
Well, for me, the last couple of years, I've been there for 5 days. I'm going to be there for 3 days this year. So sorry about that. STLV becomes expensive. Had to make it a little bit more cost effective this year. But I will still be there. So I'll be there Friday, Saturday, Sunday. But like, if you want to see Joe or Amy Wednesday through Sunday, or even like before Wednesday for Joe, apparently, you can meet up. So we'd love to see you there. And also, so that means that we're planning to record an episode at Star Trek Las Vegas to talk about our thoughts for there, and then to release that 2 weeks from the time this airs. So just wanted to let you listeners know what's coming up, and we do hope to see you at Star Trek Las Vegas. All right, well, it's been so much fun talking about Kern today and enlightening Joe, but that isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on the network. Here's what you might have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, literary Treks.
But in this case, I like the character in the fact that she's a counselor and a Vulcan, because when you go to a counselor, most of the time it's about your emotions or dealing with your emotions. So how ironic it is that a Vulcan is the person you go to figure out how to deal with emotional issues from a non-emotional person.
Earl Grey.
Episodic TV is really good for watching in bed before you go to sleep, because you can go to bed, watch a little 45-minute episode, and by the end you're almost asleep. So it's like a nice little comfort blanket.
You're saying Star Trek puts you to sleep?
Yes. Even though I love it, it does. If I didn't have it on the background, I probably wouldn't sleep, because I've become so used to it.
Interesting. So it's like a soothing presence.
Oh, yeah. It's that background noise of life. Star Trek, the hum of the warp drive.
The Ready Room.
Do you feel like there are too many of these arcs, too many of these threads running through a 14-episode season? And I ask that because one of the more interesting stories to me, apart from the Red Angel, the big story, is the Stamets-Culber story. Mm-hmm. And I think that both the actors, Wilson Cruz and Anthony Raup, have done an amazing job of portraying this story. The chemistry between them feels so real, and I've really connected with the emotions behind this story. But I feel shortchanged. I feel like we're only dipping in here and there, mm-hmm. just enough to remind us that that story is going on. Whereas I would like to see it develop more, and I feel like maybe they're just trying to do too much in too little time.
Warp 5.
But I think Brandon's right. You can jump to Bound and have the same thing.
Yeah, you can jump to Bound and have the same thing.
Because you could have him say, I want to leave, them find his replacement, whatever happens in between, now he decides to stay and there's a problem because this guy wants to stay.
Which plays out all in Bound.
Correct. So I think I'm not going to be able to drive Brandon as crazy as I want to. I will say no.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app and get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and written review that helps others to find the show. And if you leave that star rating and written review before August 31st, you can be in with a chance of winning our Star Trek collectible cards.
If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube, Windows Phone, and most third-party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook and it should come right up.
So Joe, you want a bonus question?
That's my favorite part of podcasting, Justin's love bonus that. Questions.
I love how you're still excited about it.
We should have, there should be a jingle, I think. Or are we theme tune the Justin's bonus question round?
You could ask one too if you want, but so here's my bonus question. I know Klingons are not your favorite. What is your favorite species? What is your favorite species in Star Trek?
Oh, do you know what? It has to be Kelpian just now.
Kelpian?
Yeah, I love Doug Jones. Out of all the conventions that we've been to, you get kind of immune to being starstruck when you see, like, seeing Marina Sirtis. It's like, oh, it's Marina. Who cares?
Oh, jeez. I know, it's not.
But you become immune. And you're like, oh, look, yeah. there's Nicole DeBoer saying hello to me. That's fine. I'm okay with that.
Okay, you get used to it because they are regular people, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, that's true. And you, initially when you do it, you don't think that they are regular people. But it turns out they actually are. Doug Jones, on the other hand, STLV last year, he was just standing in the middle of the floor and I went up to say hello and I lost emotional containment.
Really?
I was like, there was tears. I couldn't form words.
Did he give you a hug? I know he likes to do that.
He did, but with his hands on my face.
Oh, right. I think I've seen the picture, actually.
Yeah, it was, and it wasn't weird in any way. It was just how he is. And he's just, I'm quite convinced that the way he behaves in real life is the way that he is as a human being. He's just this beautifully spirited person. And I really appreciated that.
Oh, wow. Okay, and because of that, you like the Kelpians the most.
Yeah, that was a question, yeah. yeah, Kelpians, definitely. I just like the way I know they're humanoid. But the way Doug Jones has the walk down, and they've got they must have like hoof-like feet because he's got those weird non-heeled shoes that he walks in.
I still want to see the hoof feet, maybe in season 3.
Maybe. So I like the fact that while they are still humanoid, they look more alien than what we've seen before.
Okay, very cool. Well, for me, my favorite species is the Bajorans. And, you know, part of it's because I love DS9. I know we podcast about TNG, but I've said it before, DS9 is my favorite Star Trek series.
Mine too.
Yeah. And I mean, by just a little bit, because I love TNG as well. But I love that you get to dive so deeply into the Bajoran culture. Kira's my favorite character in Star Trek and all of Star Trek. And I just love, like, I don't really believe in an organized religion, but I love the Bajoran religion and how it's portrayed respectfully and like all of their history and culture and struggles. And I love Ro as well. She's one of my favorite characters. So it's the Bajorans for me, even though I love so many species in Star Trek. That's it. So
yeah, you've got a lot with that choice. You've got a lot more kind of background on
background
them.
So far. Yeah.
And I've got less with the Kelpians.
But that's cool. I like your choice. I like the Kelpians a lot. All right. Well, if you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select Earl Grey. That will come right to us, and we might read your email on the show. You can also find the network on Twitter at TrekFM and on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. So, Joe, where can people find you when you're not reevaluating what you think about Klingons and Star Trek?
Well, as usual, you can get me on the Babel Conference. I'll be lurking around there somewhere. Or you can tweet me, yeah. Tweet me on the Twitter, yeah. I'm still not used to using Twitter. I don't understand what it is right yet, really. You can get me there at joeyjoe77uk. Or, as people have been increasingly doing, you can email me, joepodcasts@gmail.com. And people have been really nice with their feedback on my first few co-hosting episodes.
That's great to hear. And maybe you'll get an email in Czech or Hungarian.
I'll have to Google Translate it and hopefully it doesn't insult
my
family.
That'd be awesome. Yeah. That'd be awesome.
And Justin, where can people contact you when you're not having your memory erased and being assigned to a new family unit?
Who am I? Are you my family?
Yes, I am your dad, and your name is Amy Nelson.
Oh, God. Wow. Listeners who've listened this far, this is very bizarre.
Yes. Switch
oh, wait,
off.
Wait. I've gotten my memory back. I know who I am. And that
Justin
was really
Ozer.
Weird, Joe. Yeah, I'm Justin nice. Ozer. Well, you can find me on Twitter. I'm at TrekFan4747, where I tweet about nothing but Star Trek. And you can find me hanging around the Babel Conference on Facebook. If you'd like to help us keep all our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more, available through our special patrons website, the Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
We'd like to take this opportunity to recognise our current associate producers, Norman Lau, Justin Ozer, Michael Huter, Thomas Appel, Chris Tribuzio, Jim McMahon, and me, Joe Keegan. Thank you for supporting Trek FM and especially Earl Grey.
So join us next time for another cup of Earl Grey.
Klingons are cool.
Because I'm sure listeners have missed this, with Richard no longer being a co-host, today is a good day to die!
That was pretty good, Justin.
I tried. I think I've burned out my vocal cords, but...
That was good. I like that. I'm convinced that I want to die now.